Good afternoon, everyone. I am Sybil Mikliszewski. I am a technology director at 21CF. I kicked off the new year in a new role. I am working out of the office of the CIO, focused on women in technology initiatives. I'm very excited about that. I work closely with HR to keep an eye on recruiting, as well as advisor for our Women in Technology group at Vox. So before we jump in, I'd love to have the rest of the panel introduce themselves.
Hi, everyone. I'm Susan Chang. I oversee content technology and operations at Warner Brothers.
I'm Denise Evans, and I recently took a new position. I am in charge of operations for FilmTrack. I have come from the customer side or the studio side. Now I'm on the vendor side. Interesting transition.
I'm Debbie Fiorella, and I lead IT for Universal Studios Hollywood, the theme park.
And I'm Cindy McKenzie. I'm the CEO for Deluxe Entertainment.
Awesome. So what a wonderful discussion today. A lot of great material from Dr. Iris Furstenberg. I think for sure the relationship component really resonated with me. I think as I reflect on my own career, relationships have been the number one factor in my progression. Certainly, it was a close relationship that I had with back in my early in my career that brought me to Cindy's group like 10 years ago at Fox. I know it really is, and has continued on even as I move into this new role. Do you guys have any thoughts on Dr. Iris's talk today? Or
I do. Oh. But I always do.
Let's go for it, Denise.
No. I'm going to behave, I promise. So I could especially relate to the last topic that she was speaking to, managing remote efforts. This is the first organization that I've worked with technologists that live all over the United States, and I have found it to be incredibly challenging. We are not connecting from a neuron perspective. I can't even see their body language when we're speaking. So I feel at a great disadvantage as I'm trying to learn a new organization and I can't feel this person. You know, I can't physically connect. I find it incredibly challenging, and I don't have a solution for it yet, but maybe we will start beaming back and forth, to locations. But it is real. It is absolutely real. They don't trust me because they don't know me, and it's hard to get that trust factor when they're not in the room with you. So I feel it. Yeah.
I love the simplification of the three things. I mean, it's like we almost all know that, but just to really simplify in a time when things are so complicated, I love that. And then painting the art of the possible, because sometimes I feel like I'll be three or four steps ahead of something, and I'm trying to paint that picture, and I'm obviously not doing it effectively sometimes if I can't get the other person on board. So just really painting that picture, that really resonated with me.
Just on trust, one of the things that Vicky, our CTO, started last year was a talk about transformational leadership. And we did this really, I have to say, awkward exercise with all of her direct reports, and then later on, I did it with my team. Some of you guys are here that participated, but we literally wrote down and scored everybody 1 to 10 how much we trusted them at work. Oh, wow. And then we went around and did a round robin, and we like had our little cards, and we said, I gave you a score of 8 because, you know, you didn't show up at that meeting, and you weren't credible, or something you said made me feel like I was excluded. All this stuff. And so we went through this whole thing. It was very emotionally draining. And I thought to myself, you know, I spend more time with these people than I should be doing this with my husband, right? But I thought that exercise was great because it was all about, like, ask or tell somebody, you know, and how everything starts with how much you trust each other to get everything else done at work.
Yeah, I really actually love that point about trust, especially because I know I'm an introvert. So for me to really develop meaningful relationships takes a lot of energy and trust over time. And so sometimes building relationships or networking doesn't necessarily come so naturally to me in a big room of people like this. But so yeah, I thought the whole trust factor was a really interesting principle.
And for me, I'm all about relationships, right? I think that is the key to everything. But I think on top of one-to-one relationships, it's a team dynamic, right? And, you know, being a CIO, you're part of an executive team that has to be able to make decisions. And you have to treat the entire team as equal and having a value and having a voice. And that actually was interesting to me because I think being in IT my whole life, I always thought of myself as really serving the business more. But at a certain level, you get to a point where you just have to be an equal team member if you're going to add the value that you need to add. And that's all about relationships as well and trusting your role and making every group you work with a team.
Actually, I can personally attest to that, Cindy, as being part of your team. You actually, I mean, this was 10 years ago when we were working together, but I remember fondly of the family feel that your leadership brought to this table. And, you know, speaking of, you know, I know now you're no longer at Fox and you're the CIO at Deluxe, which is amazing. Could you share with us a little bit about your journey and how you navigated through, you know, a successful career? From like, obviously, I met with you 10 years ago, but
I'll talk about resiliency because I do think that that's part of it. And when you were talking about resiliency, you were talking about failure. But I also think it's about how do you look at change, right? And I'm a glass half empty kind of person by nature. Like I'm a warrior, and you know, I've through my career gone through a lot of change. And I remember, I'll probably say the first one where I probably grew the most was when I was at Sony. And for anyone who remembers ever hearing about Beatles at Sony, I was a Beatle. And so there was an org change where they took IT people, and I'm a real typical IT person. I love to run projects. I love technology. And they decided my job was going to be a business relationship manager. I was going to have no staff, and all I was going to do is be assigned 5 executives, and I needed to take care of them. It was the most terrifying thing I have ever been asked to do. I'm like, I'm the person who delivers. I want to sit in the back and run the projects. You can have somebody else go be the business relationship manager. And they gave me people I didn't even know. And again, whoever Sybil, I think, said that you're by nature shy. I'm by nature horrifically shy. And I got forced to deal with a bunch of Sony executives. I got production, post-production, the studio, all these people, and I just had to go meet them, convince them that there was value in my working with them, and then put together projects and sponsor them for them. It was the best growing experience for me because it was not my nature to do that, but the fact that I was forced to do that and I had to just go walk up to the president of production and say, hi, I'm your new IT person. I'm coming to your staff meetings. This is going to be great. which, you know, I kept in touch with him for probably 10 years after I left, right? So it forced me to learn a skill that wasn't by nature, you know, one I had. And it's that resiliency to start to get the confidence to look at an opportunity and say, I can do this, I have the skill sets, and I'm going to learn from each of these experiences. And even if that isn't what I want to do, which it really wasn't what I wanted to do, I still learned from it, and I took that to the next thing I did. So I really think as I look at my career, I've switched not only, you know, jobs, I've switched industries. I went from entertainment to engineering construction, and my first week was forced to go to an executive offsite with all the executives to talk through their strategy, and I was like, I'm going to participate, and I realized by the end of the day that there were so many shared things that there actually was a lot of value there. So it's really the resiliency to look at the opportunities, do the best with them, learn from them. You know, whether or not you fail or succeed, don't go in thinking you're going to fail. Go in thinking that this is great, I'm going to take this.
And Denise, you actually just started a new role as EVP of Operations at FilmTrack.
Right.
So what's the magic behind a longstanding career in tech?
Well, I'm an agent of change. If I work for a company, it's going to be sold within 5 years. So sold or bankruptcy or some disruptive change. So as soon as I put my pictures on my office, I go, you start counting the days. I guarantee it. So so I've been forced to change. You know, I am a little bit of an introvert. I know you don't think that, but I actually am. I like to be comfortable, but I do embrace change. I'm generally pushed into it, not by my own desire, but I rise to the occasion when I'm faced with it. I really embrace it. I think it's kept me young. I think it's kept me, you know, vibrant with the younger workforce. And even though sometimes I am absolutely fearful of the next move, I go through with it anyway. And, you know, as my mother always said, it didn't kill you, did it? And I said, no, Mom, it didn't kill me. I'm still alive. But it was scary there for a minute.
That's so true. And yeah. I always think, like, what's the alternative, right?
Right.
If you don't embrace it, right. What's the alternative? Right. Resist it?
And with change, there's always that possibility of the opportunity, right? It's like back to Iris's story with the, you know, with instead of seeing the within the crisis, being able to see the opportunity in that. And, you know, here being at the Smart Content Hollywood, a lot of, there's a lot of talk about AI, machine learning, blockchain. And so, you know, I find myself fascinated with, you know, the future of work, especially with an inclusion lens. So recently, I just learned about the California law that passed where all publicly traded companies headquartered in California require at least one female on the board of their board of directors. Susan, I know that you've done some work in this, and this is an area of interest for you. Can you share with us a little bit about that?
Sure. I would love to be able to say it was all altruistic because I wanted more women on boards, but it actually started really selfishly. About 5 years ago, I randomly got a text from my old boss from Johnson & Johnson, who had moved on since. And he sent me a picture and said, finish my 30 marathon. And it was a picture of O'Brien who was 40 pounds less than when I left him 5 years ago at Johnson & Johnson. And I thought, and he didn't run when I worked with him. He was a workaholic, you know, both him and I would like be on email at 11 o'clock at night. And I thought, oh my God, what happened to him in 5 years? So of course I thought, I need to feed this person, he needs to eat. So we met at Stinking Rose. I don't remember if I ordered the same meal to build trust, but we definitely had garlic. And, you know, I started hearing what he did for 5 years of his life, and he literally, turned over two different companies. He's sitting on three different boards, getting paid more than he did from Johnson & Johnson. He's 42 years old, he has two young kids, and he's got their college savings, house paid off, all this stuff.
Killing
and he ran 30.
Just killing it.
Right?
Yeah.
And awesome. I thought to myself, man, I know this dude. You know, he ain't got anything on me. Like, what the heck? Why am I still, you know, getting up at 7 in the morning brushing my teeth? So, so I started wondering, you know, why can't I sit on a couple of boards and be paid? You know, what's so complicated about that? And I started doing all this research, and I realized you have to do, like, a whole bunch of stuff. You have to, like, brush up your resume, figure out. You got to network, and I'm also an introvert, even though actually most people can tell. So fast forward to today. Earlier, was it end of last year, Cindy? I think we went... So there's this organization called Board 2020. You guys should all Google it when you go home. And basically, it's California Legislation 826. And I remember that. You guys are all think, wow, she reads the legislation at night. But it's 826 because for those of you in retail, you know that that's also an EDI transaction for confirmation approval. Right, Dan? So 826. And it does require at least one woman on a board for a California registered public company if there's four board members, so 25%. If there are more than five board members, you need to have two women, and if you have more than six, I think you need to have three. So I started looking into this, and the percent of women who are on corporate boards for a Fortune 3000 company is 17.7%. Each board has approximately, on average, 10 people, so that's about, quick math, somebody do the math.
Don't ask me.
All I know is that in order for us to get to 20%, all we need is 1,023 women to join a board in the next 2 years. In the state of California, there's only 400 plus companies, so we only need like 23 women to join a board for a company in California to just reach 20%. Now, that isn't good enough for me, but we'll start there. Because the workforce is 50% women. So just getting to 20% is step one. Yep. So there's, what, over 100 women in this room, I think? Yep. You guys can all help us get to that goal. One thing I love about getting involved in this is because many of us, right, kind of won our awards because we work so much on inspiring the next generation of us to fill the workforce. We talk about pipeline, outreach. The average board member is 62 years old. We are the pipeline for corporate board. You need to take action now. So we will recommend you first. But you know, looking at all the stages of where we make impact in that kind of shaping the future also includes each of us. So. Sorry, it was really long. I'll stop now.
No, it was great.
I was on a board.
Well, there you go.
So I really feel, though, that this is, like, a true indicator of, like, a step in the right direction in terms of where we're going in the future of work. Deborah, do you have any thoughts on this, and where do you feel we are on this path in terms of progress?
Yeah, so clearly legislation helps where there are parts where we haven't gotten a kickstart otherwise. And I think the statistics on tech companies is actually 12% of women on board, so it's even worse when you get to that. So clearly, you know, that makes a difference. And in terms of progress, I mean, I think the short answer is yes and no. When you look at the macro statistics and you just look at to the point where, you know, women are 51% of the population, but we're still only filling less than 25% of the technology roles. As a matter of fact, I think in most tech companies, it's between like 16 and 22%. So when you look at those macro statistics, and Cindy probably knows this more than I do, but even the college women who are in computer science degrees, it's about 15 or 16% of women. So you look at those and you go, you kind of feel like, are we making the progress that we need to? Because those numbers have stayed consistent for a little while. But then if you look a little bit deeper, there actually is a lot of progress being made, and I was so fortunate to be a part of Chasing Grace episode 2 that Comcast and NBCU sponsored, and the whole episode was based upon the power of community. And so it was the filmmakers, Jennifer Kloer and Gary Schillinger, one of the things that Jennifer says is to make movement, you have to have organization. And what we're finding is that there are tech women communities and tech women groups popping up all over the place. They're in companies, they're in industries like Women in Technology Hollywood, and just that in and of itself is showing momentum. Furthermore, in the film, there's a few examples. There's tons in there, and it's an amazing documentary, and I strongly recommend it. But there's a woman in there, Claire Wasserman, who ends up getting sued. Do you know this story? Okay. So, phenomenal woman, fantastic story, but at the end of the day, that could be a whole subject in and of itself, that what happened to her, but at the end of the day, she ended up getting sued, and she thought she was called sued out of existence because she wasn't going to be able to raise the money to get the money to pay for this lawsuit, but she crowdsourced for the money, and she started with her tech women community, and she raised the money to pay off the lawsuit. So I say all that to say that there are a lot of examples of where the power of community is actually helping women. And when I heard you talk about inclusion and really the impact, you know, on the brain and what communities can do for that, it really resonated with me. So I don't know, I'm a glass half full kind of person, so I think we that we are making progress and communities do matter.
Would you agree also, Cindy, on our progress?
Oh, no. I said I was the glass half empty person. So, a number of us have done, try to do give back. And one of the things I do on the side for my job is help run a nonprofit that does, called STEM Advantage, that does scholarships, mentors, and internships for women and minorities to get into STEM majors. And, there's a real issue with even a pipeline of people to hire and get in. And, you can create a community, but if no one's going in to be part of the community, you have an issue. And, I helped found it when my son was a computer science major at UCLA, and I went to the school to do parents orientation, and there was three girls in the entire class of 500 computer science majors. And I was a computer science major, a minor, because I don't think they had a major when I went. And there was probably 30% women. And I hadn't realized that things had changed so drastically. And the number has stabilized, but it's way down.
Way down from the 80s and 90s.
From where it was. And part of it is, from what I've read, that women just don't see themselves as part of that community. They see it as gamers, and they don't see themselves. Although that is really changing, so gaming for girls is changing, and I think we'll see that change because of that. But you're never, part of what I try to do, and I know a number of us do, is make sure that we have this pipeline and that we consider the pipeline as we're hiring and giving people opportunities to get into these jobs. And it's not just women, it's any underserved communities. You don't see, Latinos, you don't see, African Americans, you just don't see it, and it, comparatively. And so it is something we all have to do. And actually, I was going to say, when we talk about partnerships and relationships, part of what somebody suggested this to me, I didn't come to this on my own, it's to ask our vendor partners to do the same thing. So not only do you make sure that when you're hiring and your teams are hiring that you consider a wide variety pool, you ask, as vendors are bringing people onto your projects, that they're giving you a diverse pool of people to look at. And that's a whole nother way to put that reach out one more from what you can do with your own teams. So I do think there's a lot still to do. I do think there's a lot of progress. The Women on Board thing I'm very excited about. And you'd be surprised, I still stuck in my head, I don't know, Susan, that Skechers is a company that's here that kind of sells to a lot of women who doesn't have a single woman on its board. So it's kind of interesting when you think about the power of diversity that a major company that deals with women and children doesn't think they need a woman. So,
and it's really a rare treat to actually have to be talking about some of these sort of issues and concerns about the diversity and inclusion and the pipeline itself, and the fact that we actually have a room at least half male. So in terms of next steps and solutions, and Denise, do you have anything that we can tell our allies, come with us as we move forward into the digital age?
I've tried very hard. I mean, I've spoken to so many young girls and tried to figure out why they're not attracted to technology. I never once hear I'm intimidated or I think it's the nerd factor, and there's a lot of fashionistas out there and I try to tell them, you should see Nadia. She dresses very nicely, and it's like...
What's wrong with my jeans?
Absolutely. Yeah, she's a very sharp dresser.
Don't I look hip? Yeah. It's really interesting to me. I have a daughter, and she has no desire whatsoever to consider technology, which I was very depressed about, because I know it's a good way. It actually, as a profession, it pays well. It really does. And I tried to convince her of it, and her grades were good enough, but she just, there's something about them I'm seeing girls discovering technology at an early age that she said, I don't want to do this. I don't want to program for an iPhone, or I don't want to, I don't have anything to say other than I try to be a role model. I try to reach out to communities to pitch you know, on behalf of technology, because I think for me, it's been an incredible ride. I have sat at C-level tables. If I felt excluded, I own that, and I found another way to get through the door. I've never felt like I was a victim. I try not to alienate anyone who's trying to get in my way. It's all about relationships. It's all about winning people over. So I don't have an answer, but through my career, I've just tried really hard to get invited by cracking a few jokes, maybe. You know, it's like intimidate less. Don't back people into corners. Understand timing, you know, and when to make a decision, when to play hardball and when not to play hardball.
So one other thing we have to focus on as well, we've got to get people into the pipeline, no doubt, because that's the feeder. Yep. But we also need to develop and retain the women who are in technology, because that's the things to me where I am right now. I can help with the recruiting pipeline. I can be a leader there. I can ask for the right slate when we, you know, are hiring for positions. But women who are developed are 40% more likely to get promoted. So we got to focus on developing all people that you know we work with is important. But that to me, the focusing on retaining and developing women in their current roles is really important too.
Yeah, I think we have a long ways to go. I agree with that part. But I also think it's encouraging by taking what Dr. Iris said about the fact that we have 3.5 degrees of all I thought about was Kevin Bacon, but if we have 3 degrees of separation and that individual connection, because I do feel like, you know, when a young girl or a young teen, when I'm looking at them in the eye and we're talking about what they're interested in, I feel like that connection and the fact that they see you as a person and they can imagine themselves doing what you're doing. And, you know, between that and being able to reach 3 other people, I am very hopeful that those numbers will change.
Yeah, I would actually have to agree with you on that, because I could just think back on my own career. The majority of my mentors actually have been male. And so for the males out there, I think that I wouldn't, you know, if you enjoy mentorship and, you know, really take on an active role in helping a female develop her career, I think that that would help, I guess, move the needle a little bit. I mean, even today I still have, I have a lot of mentors I've collected through the years, but certainly, you know, my male mentors have really helped with the confidence, helped with trying to sort of explain things maybe that I didn't understand from just even my own perspective. And then even as a woman of color, you know, I'm first generation immigrant. So my parents didn't work in corporate America. So I had to rely on mentorship to understand how to navigate through. So anyhow. Any other thoughts before we move to questions?
Yes, Denise, I have a 17-year-old daughter, and she will not go into computer science either. So if you find the trick, let me know. Yeah. I convinced my son, but not my daughter.
Well, I have to say, I have three boys, right? My first one went into computer science. My second one refused to even take a class in college and got a finance degree and decided he liked valuations, then started taking data analytics classes on Coursera, and now is a data scientist at Google. So, you know, just never assume that they're, you know, that I think IT is the new finance, because when I went to college, you know, you got told you should take a finance class no matter what, because you need to understand the basics of finance in order to be successful. I think IT is the same way. There is almost no jobs that don't require that you understand some basics of technology and that you understand how technology can enable the business. So I really do think, honestly, every student should take computer science, because it is part of our jobs, and as technology continues to improve, it is going to be what we, I mean, honestly, already it's what we do in our spare time, too. So I just think it's a given.
All right, thank you. Do we have any questions from the audience? there? I guess, yeah, I don't know where the mic runner is. Is there a mic runner in the house? Oh, okay, yeah, go ahead.
I don't know what you do,
where
guys.
Where did you disappear?
Usually you applaud. Whenever I hear applause, I immediately start
running. We don't
want
to know, guys.
That's just my M.O. Who's got a question over here? Oh, excellent. Thank you. Sorry. And I only have three other staff members here and two other microphones, but I do it the best.
Excuses.
So a statement and then a question. The statement in regards to reaching out to diversity and also looking for talent in the future for IT, as far as children, I also have four children from 17 to 4. There's more technology being brought into school as younger children. I think influencing them earlier so that what they're seeing is not so much about image and, you know, there's not a line between boy and girl and what you see there. But my question is more about trust. Each one of you are in a role of power and you've been through different parts of your career. Would you think with technology today, the advancement of technology and social awareness, do you think that you can lend trust? Meaning earlier the doctor spoke about how the architect or the company president was able to get that meeting with the mayor was because of someone else. Do you think that you can lend trust through our social networks?
Well, I mean, I'm sure all of us get asked all the time to connect people and to try to do things. So, yes, I mean, I know that I do, and I'm sure we all do, because, I mean, you know, part of our jobs is to be, you know, have these connections and these relationships. And so if I get asked all the time to connect people, and as long as I suss out who they are and feel like I'm comfortable to do it, I'll do it. So I you know, one of the things I learned over the years is you trust is also, you know, taking a chance and asking for things yourself, right? And that's part of emotional intelligence, is not just to use your relationships positively. And part of, you know, doing that is, if you get somebody, I mean, even the STEM thing I do, the way we started getting all our first companies is I called every single one of my friends and I said, we're starting this nonprofit. It is going to be good for you. You have to trust me. I need you to take some interns, right? It's all, you have to use your relationships both ways. And that actually, as Ira said, builds the credibility.
Question here, right side.
Hi, I'm Shelly Andigan. Nice to meet you. In relation to what she was just asking, in what ways are you and or your companies involved in education and mentorship for those who are very young? I'm talking elementary school to junior high, using emerging media and technology.
So at Warner Brothers, we have a WB Good program, which is all about storytelling. And you can't do storytelling these days without talking about technology. And so we partner with LAUSD and go into classrooms and allow, kind of go from storyboard all the way through. So that's probably, I would say, the youngest age group that we work with. And then the age group that our WB Tech team works with is really 8 to 13, right before that puberty, you know, stage, to gauge the interest early on. And we partner with STEAM coders. And so we definitely bring them to the studio. We do it twice a day. And we also, you know, sometimes it's co-ed and sometimes we do a girls only course because, you know, it's a different kind of environment and vibe that happens. And then we look at kind of age groups all the way through, of course, girls who code, and those are more teens and thereafter. But I think LAUSD is probably the youngest group that we work with.
Yeah, and NBC, Comcast, NBCU, really Girls Who Code, Girl Develop It, and Robotics are really the three. And then there are more, but really focus more on that kind of teenage group, and then from there as well.
I've got a question over here.
Oh. Hi, I'm Ellen Schned, and I'm president of Women in Cable Telecommunications, WICT. And I'll start with both, and Lizzie is on our board, and Nadia is very involved. And I'll put in a shameless plug that we're having a membership mixer on March 25th, and we'll get the invite to Lizzie to send around. But Susan, question for you. That was really fascinating research that you did on Board 2020, A, are you on a few boards in California now? And B, how does one go about that? I mean, do you proactively reach out and volunteer oneself for a board? Do you find that you need to stay in your lane of media, or might you do a different lane, a different industry, or does it still come back down to the relationships? Somebody who's with that entity or board or company needs to recommend you.
Okay, that was really long. So your first question, so I am currently not on a public board where somebody pays me. And that I know for sure. I, you know, certainly have been on nonprofit boards, which when I asked a lot of my female executives in tech about being on boards, everybody talks about being on nonprofit boards, which is great. But every single person I asked, nobody has considered being on a for-profit board. So this year I've made it a point to sit on what I call pseudo-public boards, which means Warner Brothers as a company has a seat on something. So for example, Digital Cinema Coalition, I just recently, you know, took the Warner seat on DCDC. So it's kind of like a hybrid. Because for me, there's a point and stage, I think, in my career and life. And so for the corporate board seat, it's a bit opportunistic and also some prep that requires a lot of my time. So it is my long-range plan. By long-range, I mean 5 to 6 years, and you can write that down and let my boss know. I'm just teasing. She's great. She's very supportive. In terms of how, so one thing is about 18 months ago, I started doing all this research. It is heavily dependent on the network, which kind of works against you because then there's less, you know, women. And same with you. A lot of my mentors are male, which is great. So what I've realized is that over the next 3 to 4 years, I need to get a bunch of my trusted network career friends on boards so that it will make my goal more achievable when I'm ready. And in terms of how to do it, I am happy if you email me and anybody else. We've created this little cheat sheet. It's like getting on corporate boards for dummies, Susan version. So if you'd like to get a copy of that, I'm happy to email it to you.
How are we doing in terms of time? We're standing between crowd and wine.
That's 8 minutes over.
Do we feel like we want to just finish out this question and keep going? Would you like to have another question from the audience? We're being very open and transparent with this lovely crowd.
Or it's up to you guys. We can answer questions while drinking wine.
Yeah. Win-win, Cindy.
Very good at that.
Yeah, I think we're all very, very good at that.
Well done. I mean, I guess the whole staying in your lane question you had, yesterday IBM announced, I want to get this right. They added former U.S. Navy officer Admiral Michelle J. Howard to their board of directors. And what's really great about that is that she was the first woman to become a four-star admiral, as well as being the first African-American woman to command a U.S. Navy ship. So I wouldn't necessarily...
She's got some credentials, woman, yeah.
So I would say, you know, I don't think you would have to stay in your lane. I mean, with that example, but yeah.
And there was a whole session, not last year, but the year before at Grace Hopper on getting on boards. And I can't remember her name, I should. But she had a whole PowerPoint and a whole strategy around how to do it. It was very interesting.
Well, and part of the thing is understanding what a board does and what a board needs, right? And so boards are about risk, generally. And so, you know, for IT people in the room, understanding cybersecurity and cybersecurity risk is actually a really easy way to get interest in you on a board. So getting that skill set and being able to talk to that skill set and being able to talk about corporate risk. So I think knowing how a board works and how a board does things is really important, because it really is, just like every level of management is completely different. What you do as a VP versus what you do as a CIO versus what you do on a board are completely different jobs, and boards are very different, and how what they look at and what's important to them. And I would say figure out what it is and then figure out what you would bring to the table and structure your resume and your LinkedIn to that, and your relationships, right? If you know anybody who's on a board, because actually I got asked by UCLA to help identify women for board positions because they're trying to kind of help women get on boards. And I put a few of us on to that list. And part of it again was getting women on boards to recommend other women, because it is a lot of it is a network.
All right, great. Thank you very much for that.